and welcome to Let's Talk Diz, a show that gives you everything you need to know to help make your Disney vacation as magical as can be in just about 20 minutes. I'm your host, Jeff Coviello. With me each week is Disney Master Sandy from Easy Diz by Instant Impressions Travel Services. Sandy, how you doing tonight?
Believe it or not, once again, I'm feeling festive.
That's because you're on property again. And tonight, as promised, if for those of you that listened last week, tonight is Epcot's International Flower and Garden Festival.
It is their longest festival ever. You know, obviously, I have the dates. I've been working with them, both for myself and with clients. But when I picked up that cute little festival passport that I always get, and I looked at the cover that reads March 1st to July 5th, it's just a huge time. And it is 2 days longer than last year's, making it the longest ever. It starts one day sooner and it ends one day later.
So, I mean, that's just a massive amount of time, right? I mean, even just for the casual visitor to hear March 1st to July 5th, I don't even know how to react to that. It seems like that's, I guess, the majority of the year, but you're saying that it's 126 days, which is the longest ever. Is that the longest ever for any festival, for this festival?
It is the longest ever, and you know, I'm going to make a couple of references tonight to things that came out of COVID that we're actually happy that have stayed.
Okay.
And I remember the first year post-COVID that you and I did this show, the festival used to end usually sometime late in May, maybe early June. And I remember you saying to me, I don't get to go to this festival because I teach.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what they found is that people really love the Epcot festivals. And so stretching it right into the beginning of summer gives them that time for people to enjoy it. And kudos to the Imagineers, the maintenance teams, everybody that it takes to turn these festivals over. For instance, when this one ends, the summer used to just be Epcot is Epcot. But now, in just 9 days, they turn this over again to an extra-long food and wine festival that used to begin mid to late August that now begins mid-July.
I like that. When Epcot was just Epcot. That's a t-shirt right there, Disney, if you're listening. It's just a picture of the Dreamfinder when it just says, when Epcot was just Epcot.
We talked about festivals and I was kind of making my notes for the show and I thought, I feel like I just was taping with you, Jeff, for our Festival of the Arts show. We're here now at Flower and Garden. I'm talking about the crossover to Food and Wine, where they then get a big 6 days to the Festival of Holidays.
Right.
And so while we don't have the official dates for 2023 on Food and Wine and Festival of the Holidays yet, they're pretty set. And I did some high-level math.
High-level.
And 327 days this year will be festivals at Epcot.
Wow.
You know, there's just 10% of the year that isn't a festival. And so there are some great things that come with the festivals, whichever one you go to. But I'm hoping that maybe they've heard me. I'm sure this is what drove what the Imagineers did. But we had talked in some of our past episodes when I was covering festivals, and I jokingly said to you, this is food and wine with a little bit of flour, and this is food and wine right, with a little bit of art. They really were all taken over by the food kiosks.
Sure.
And now, I don't want to make anyone think there aren't plenty of food kiosks to go around now, but this year, I am so excited that the festival is about the flowers and the gardens.
I am a son of a landscaper, so I grew up around wonderful plants and flowers my entire life. I have the opposite of a green thumb, so I can appreciate the work it takes to make this stuff happen. But talk to us about, I guess, you know, the focus is back on the flowers and gardens. So what's new? What are we seeing that we have that renewed focus?
We always see a new entry thing. And this year we kind of have a double entry. So if you enter from the front, it's a big, massive display. The current theme for lots of things seems to be Encanto. four fabulous topiaries kind of welcoming you into the festival if you're coming in from the bus, the parking lot, or getting off the monorail. And we also see, which is not always present, but if you enter through the International Gateway, right after you get in the entrance, it really doesn't belong to any country, just right there on that pathway, kind of a back welcome, a Mickey and Minnie topiary set that's just beautiful.
Those topiaries just, I mean, across the board, just out of control. I mean, they're just incredible. They bring the character to life. It's really unbelievable.
And this year, more than ever, I think you're seeing some new things, some new techniques. They're phenomenal. I'll put a link in the show notes on our YouTube channel. I've got a video that covers about 90% of the topiaries that I was able to shoot before I got rained upon.
Okay, so before we break down the topiaries, anything else that's new?
They brought in some new tours, and I'm excited to share some info on that as well.
Awesome. All right, well, let's start with the topiaries, right? Because, I mean, I just waxed poetically about how incredible they are.
I will say, like, I have been in awe of topiaries probably since I was 5 years old and came to Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
I will give a confession that on my front lawn, there may be a 6 foot tall Mickey and a 6 foot tall Pluto topiary.
Can neither confirm nor deny. It's fine.
As person with zero green thumb, thanks to my brother's help, they are covered in fake ivy and they require zero care or they would have been dead years ago. But I just think that they're so incredible and the work that they do. And this year, there are, I'm going to call it 26 locations. Again, if you look in that little passport, they list 26 spots for you to stop and see them. But again, to the horticulture team, who probably as we speak, while they're keeping an eye on things for refreshes, they're already planning and starting on things for next year. The 26 locations have a total of 65 individual statues.
Wow.
Just a phenomenal number of hours and love that went into these creations.
You know what makes that number even more amazing for me? And it's for anybody that's been to Epcot really in the last year, and you, I know you've been several times, to have that many beautiful topiaries, that many statues, so to speak, and still have some of this park that's being reimagined. Like that's a staggering number for a park that is still under construction in yes. many parts.
And that's the topiaries. That's not covering the gardens and all the extras. That's right. Just the topiaries. It's amazing to me what they literally pack in there without it feeling packed.
So when you say the locations and the statues, the topiaries, like, are we seeing the same things that we would normally see? Do they still look the same? Is there anything different?
They're different this year. We see a lot of the traditional ones we've always seen, but I noticed two trends, one of which I just thought was so neat. It took me a minute to kind of figure out what it was, but they've done a lot with succulents now. So for instance, there's a butterfly that is 100% made of succulents.
Huh.
And so it's true. It's a flower. So that's perfect.
Right.
And then I will admit, I kind of spent a couple of days scouring the park looking for somebody on the horticulture team that I could bother with all of my questions, but no such luck. So I've spent some time researching. One of the things that we saw very little of it in my mind in the past, but this year there was a large amount of it, is called saphicum, which is like a moss.
Right.
And what it allowed them to do is create incredible color. They could dye it all different ways to add some great accents. But it also created this phenomenal flush finish, almost like it was sculpted clay and super smooth. One of the statues where you really see it without even trying to look is the new Tiana sculpture. And again, that video on our YouTube, I did a close-up of her face so you can see, because her face is all in that new technique. But I saw it in lots of different places. It really helped to give things a lot more depth and a lot more detail, where obviously with just flowers or greenery and plants, they're a little bit more limited. With some of these moss techniques, like the detail on Minnie Mouse's shoe was one of the things I took an up-close picture of because it was just amazing.
So you think the use of this technique is simply just to enhance the detail?
So I should not say don't quote me on something that's going on air, but I'm going to say it anyhow.
Tough to not quote you when we all hear it after you say it.
I will admit, Flower and Garden has always started the first week in March, and I know that because it's my mother's birthday weekend, and we typically would do something here because it's one of her favorite festivals.
Got it.
And I can tell you without a doubt, the last 5 years, every year, this particular first week of the festival gets hotter and hotter and hotter.
Okay.
And I have to wonder, this is totally my guess, though, Disney, feel free to let us know what you think, if the combination of the extra heat and the extra length that these things are on show required some additional techniques so that they have that longevity. If you're in the park early in the morning, you will see, I mean, they go through these painstakingly and refresh them where they need to. It's not that if you come the end of June, you're going to see things half dead on display. That would never happen.
No.
But I have to wonder if this gives it some more life because of the extended heat.
Are you ready to move on to some of the gardens?
There's not just some. There's also 26 of them.
Well, let's talk about it, right? Because for folks that maybe haven't been to this festival, right, we're talking about topiaries and then we moved on to gardens. So give us a little bit of breakdown of not only what the gardens are, what some of the new ones are, what some of your favorites were, but maybe set the stage first so that people understand when we say gardens, what we even mean.
That's a great point, and I will say it definitely varies. Some of the gardens, I will admit, even with a book and even knowing where I'm supposed to be looking, it's a couple of plants and there's a tiny sign, and I'm like, oh yeah, now that I see it, I get it.
Right.
Some of them are super large. The UK does a tea garden that's really its entire backyard, for lack of a better phrase, as big as their own store. There's gardens with little fairy houses in them. And I think what I like about the gardens, unlike the topiaries, while they're obviously, topiaries are all sculpted like different statues, they're topiaries. They're pretty much the same. The gardens bring a lot of uniqueness to them. And there are 7 new ones this year. Some of my old favorites are back, though. In Italy, they have the Italian spice garden. And in Morocco, they do a spice garden, but they actually create statues and figures out of spices. It's amazing to me what they could do.
That's cool.
This year, there's a couple of new ones that I loved. Japan has one of the new gardens, and I hope I'm going to pronounce this right. It's called the Shishi Udashi Garden.
Okay.
And it was really unique. It's a combination of bamboo and rocks and water, and it really creates this really serene scene. I kept thinking, I'd love to have this in my backyard. I could sit and read a book and look at it and listen to it for hours. It would have this incredibly calming effect. But thanks to Mr. Google, I learned that the Shishi Udashi translates to scare the deer.
Huh.
And it was set up kind of like the scarecrows that we have in America, that the combination of the constant noise in the water kept the deer away from their gardens. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, very cool. And again, like everything else with Epcot, like culturally appropriate and accurate, really, really fun. What other gardens?
Definitely. And I will say that a lot of the things also had major signage if you wanted to stand in front of it and read in detail.
Sure.
I think they did a great job this year of kind of expanding the educational component of this.
Cool. Couple other gardens?
The other one they added that I liked is called the Songbird Meadow, and it's all different birdhouses to attract different birds, and it also attracted a lot of butterflies. Again, something small that if there wasn't a sign in front of it, you'd walk by. Flowers are in Epcot all year round, even when it's not a festival. So you might walk by and not even realize that it's a special garden. But there are so many to see. I honestly think you need some extra time in Epcot if you're a fan of all of these things, because there's no way to do it all in a day.
So what would be your recommendation? Would it be to pick up that festival guide?
The festival guide is great. It has lots of things in it. It has all of the topiaries and where to find them, all of the gardens and where to find them, all of the food and the different food booths. We do have a lot of that information in advance. We actually send those passports to our clients in advance because, honestly, I think especially if you only have one day in Epcot, getting in there, getting the book, and figuring out how to see it all is tough. Epcot is not laid out super easy as far as I'm going to walk this way, and then I'm going to turn around and walk that way, and I'm going to get to see it all. It's really hard to get to see it all and catch these things as you're going between all the pages and trying to fit everything in. So if you want to see it in detail, it's definitely something that needs a plan.
Sandy, you had mentioned before the Tea Caddy Garden in the UK. Is there anything else we need to know about that particular garden?
That garden's been there for, I can't even remember how many festivals. It's always caught my eye because instead of using regular planter pots, everything is planted in giant teacups.
Right.
And they've always had a little sign at each teacup and you could stop and read it. But this year, they're actually doing a tour. So you can sign up in the morning. It is free, but pretty limited. It is only 20 people per tour. There is a 1 p.m. and a 3:30. If those times don't work for you or you're not lucky to be one of those 40 people, they do have a special pamphlet that will give you the majority of the information, and you can take a self-guided tour.
Okay. So let's segue into like some of the extras that exist with these festivals. Obviously, we've talked about them for the other festivals we've broken down. What kind of extras are we seeing with this one?
According to Disney, one of the extras, because it certainly fits in thematically, is the Behind the Scenes tour. So if this is your one trip ever or one time to go to Epcot, that Behind the Scenes is available all year. We actually have episode 146. I did it again when it returned in October, but right. It's something that they really push in connection with this festival.
Okay.
Also, on one of my, or probably two of our old episodes, where I did some of the wildlife tours, I talked about Disney's connection to the Purple Martins, which are a seasonal bird in Florida, and they happen to fall during this festival. So every Wednesday at 1 p.m., the animal keepers from Animal Kingdom come over to Epcot to do a special discussion on the Purple Martins, because as I said before, kind of in with Songbird Meadow, birds obviously go with flowers, so it's a great crossover from the two parks.
Okay, this next one that I know you want to talk about is something that my mother was totally in love with, so go ahead, take it.
Butterfly Landing. I think it was butterflies are a signal of my grandmother, so it's something that I always do yeah, that holds yeah. a special place for me. I will say I love Butterfly Garden more mid-season to end of season.
Yeah.
The beginning of the season, there's certainly butterflies in there, but not the swarms that you see later in the year, because one of the really cool things is there are three houses with chrysalises yeah. and all different stages of butterflies. And typically, if you stand there long enough, you will generally get to see one hatching.
Yeah, it's very so, cool.
A very neat experience. And again, end of the season, you do find a lot more of them in there.
So I know we got two more extras that you wanted to talk about. Take it away.
Spike the Scavenger Hunt. We've found with all the festivals, they add a cute little scavenger hunt, $9.99. It kind of keeps the kids busy. You can get a prize at the end. They're generally not overly committal on the prize up front because sometimes they run out, and so the prize might change mid-season. I will tell you, don't do the hunt for the prize. Do it if you're looking for something extra to keep your child busy. But I think make your own topiary hunt. We'll do a download of all the topiaries. So if you just want one little checklist instead of a 25-page booklet, we've got you covered there.
And as we segue over to the Theater in America, what do we have?
Garden Rocks, free concert every night for all 126 nights, 5:30, 6:45, 8 p.m. Some of them are cover bands, things you may or may not have heard of, but some of them are real top talent. Daughtry was performing this week. I mean, free. Yeah. See Daughtry.
Yeah.
You can do a dining package, which will get you front of the theater seating. You can do the standby line, which will get you, as space is available, back of the theater. But one of the best things about that theater is it's outside. So if you don't want to see and you just want to hear, you don't need to do anything but walk in that direction, and you can't help but hear it.
All right, so we've taken a significant amount of time, and we have not yet talked about any of the culinary experiences there. So let's briefly break down the food before we call it an evening.
You bet. And honestly, I put it at the end because, as I said earlier, I'm excited that the focus is back on Flower and Garden. I did kind of walk around and think to myself, you know what? They need these booths because there's people eating everywhere.
Right.
And they really need that extra food service. I will say it's one of the other good things that came out of COVID that has stayed. When they reopened right after COVID, they realized that we couldn't have a lot of indoor dining. And they added picnic tables and little cocktail tables all over the park. And they've kept them there. One of the things that I used to dislike about some of the festival food is you would get it and you really had to stand and hold it in your hand because it was like two tables per booth.
Right.
But it's nice to have a place to sit down. This festival, I didn't think that the food offerings, that there were that many new things. I did count it up in the book. There are 30. But I will say that many of them to me weren't new. They were just slight tweaks on an old one. The honey stand, which is one of the food booths that I've really come to love. There's a honey pizza flatbread that I've had pretty much every festival. They change one ingredient, but 90% is the same. There's a pineapple skewer. They change the spice on it. So not a lot of new food things in my mind, which really let you concentrate on the festival. I did have to have a couple of things.
Yes, of course.
So I did the char-grilled bison ribeye with a creamy leek fondue and a red wine butter sauce and red wine goat cheese. So say that one 10 times fast, but that's amazing.
A lot. There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on there. And it's one of the food booths that's super unique. Out of all of the booths, there is one that is seasonal because it uses things from local farming.
Got it.
And so it actually has three different menus throughout the festival.
That's cool. I like that.
So kind of a neat little take on that. I did have to have a sweet dessert. The chocolate maple whiskey cake was new this year, and I mean, chocolate and whiskey. Oh, what more do I have to say? Can't go wrong there.
For me, you need to say nothing else. That's it.
And I'm a big lover of cheese. So first I had my goat cheese. And then I had a citrus baked brie with a lemon marmalade and a limoncello blueberry. Ooh. Limoncello soaked blueberries. So definitely great light bites if you wanted some things, and again reasonably priced. They were all between $4 and $8.
Awesome. So load up that gift card and start to walk the circle.
There you go.
All right, we're coming to the end of the program. What haven't we covered tonight?
By now I think it's no secret I am not a huge fan of Harmonious, so we will say goodbye to it just a month into this festival. Harmonious will leave us, and in an oxymoron kind of way, Epcot Forever will join us for a limited engagement.
So we have no idea what's coming. We just know that right now it's Epcot Forever for a limited time.
We know
time.
It's Epcot Forever, but not really forever.
Well, I thank you for taking the time and going down there, because these festivals, as you said when you led off the show, they dominate the year in Epcot. And so it's always good to know what's different, what's new, what's different from the previous festival that's just passed, and what's different from the festival that will be coming. So thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward, as my next trip will be during this festival. Have a great week.
You too.
And that's a wrap this week on Let's Talk Diz. If anyone you know could benefit from this or any show, please share on your Facebook and Instagram for other Disney fans to enjoy. And don't forget to reach out to the folks at Easy Diz by Instant Impressions Travel Services for any Disney destination planning. Make it a great week. And as always, keep making memories.